Okay, well, I'm supposed to facilitate this, so in keeping with the way we've been starting these webinars, we'll go around and introduce ourselves, so if everybody could get in the queue. We'll go around and introduce ourselves and indicate something about the area of interest that we have and what we'd perhaps what we'd like to get out of the discussion with Frank this morning. So I'll start. I'm Susan Goldman. I'm at UIC in the States. And the issue of collaborative learning is one that I think about a lot. And we have groups working in classrooms, not so much computer-supported collaborative learning, but definitely collaborative learning. And I think this the material or the kinds of research that's being done in CSCL, I always think about its relevance with respect to face-to-face as well. So I'm going to.
Yeah, okay, so I go next. My name is Ingo Koller. I'm one of the three instructors today. That's why my topic of interest is maybe not so surprising. It's about collaborative learning and especially how to foster collaborative learning in terms of providing learners with scripts. Maybe referring to what Susan said, I started in that direction with from the computer support, the collaborative learning side. But more recently, we also went into real classrooms and extended the script concept onto whole classrooms as well. And lately, I'm also starting to extend the script concept to contexts outside of, let's say, school-based education. Also in medical education, I will present a couple of ideas of a project that we are running right now, and I will present that later.
Hello, everybody. My name is Christoph Wecker. I'm also one of the three lecturers of this webinar, and I've been working in Frank Fischer's group for, I think, 9 years now. And I've been doing work on mainly computer-supported collaborative learning, the role of external collaboration scripts, fading of external collaboration scripts. And I've also been doing work with Ingo Koller on using collaboration scripts in classroom settings and integrating them with the larger context of the whole class discussions and using the idea of classroom scripts.
Hello, my name is Christian. I'm a PhD student here in scientific reasoning and argumentation. My research interest is in argumentation processes of social workers.
My name is Sandra Wenglein and I'm a PhD student at the TUM School of Education here in Munich. And now I'm an associate member of the Reason program, and I'm interested in collaboration scripts because we are developing a training and we want to take this as one part of the training.
So my name is Clemens Konkare. I'm a PhD student in the DTP, the doctoral training program of the DTP, and so I'm interested in how to design scripts and how to implement it in web-based learning environments. And so I think it's why I'm decided to attend it. Thank you.
Yeah, good day. My name is Carlos Mauricio. I'm part of the Reason program. And my topic of interest is video games and serious games and everything that has to be with improvement of cognitive skills on video games.
Hi, I'm Mariam, and I'm also a PhD student in the Reason program. And well, my area of interest is collaborative learning, particularly peer feedback. So I'm interested to know more about how we can use like scripts to like provide feedback. Or a good quality feedback to the peers.
Hey, I'm Barbara Vega. I'm from Munich, from the LMU. I'm working at the Academic Center for Higher Education, and I'm a PhD student at the MTLS, and I'm interested in collaborative learning for lecturers in higher education.
Hi, my name is Vera Gehlenbaum. I'm a PhD student at the Saarland University. And I try to include scaffolds and scripts in large lectures, so I think this will be very interesting.
Hi, my name is Katharina Engelmann. I'm in the Reason program interested in fostering scientific reasoning in university students.
Hi everyone, my name is Daniel. I'm also part of the Reason program. I'm interested into mathematics education and fostering argumentation competency in mathematics, and therefore I'm going to conduct a few interventions, and scripting might be one part of it. I'm especially interested into this webinar because I already saw a webinar on group awareness, and we have been discussing about some parallels and differences already, and this is going to be quite interesting.
Hello, my name is Anaud Valero from Wageningen University. I'm a PhD student and my focus is on the adaptive external support in argumentation-based computer-supported collaborative learning environments. And that's basically all from my side.
Hi, I'm Christian from at home because I'm waiting for the radiator guy, so that's why I'm not at the LMU. And I'm a PhD student as well. And I just want to listen to the talk because I'm, as well like Mariam, interested in feedback and how to implement maybe a script to the students to give feedback.
Hello, I also am at home. My name is David Gross and I'm a student at the University of Minnesota, and I am interested in seeing how I can use scripts to enhance progressive inquiry.
Hello, my name is Yanis Bouyas from Aristotle University. I am a PhD student. I work with Professor Stavros Dimitriadis, and we are interested in collaboration scripts and fading as well.
Okay, it's me again. I was told that the sound wasn't good, so if it's still not good, then I just walk over to Christoph's office, but please let me know. Can you hear me now?
So we can hear you, but there are some noise. I think a headset would be... you have a headset, so it's still not much better. So I think it would be better. Well, we could try. Maybe it's getting better over time. In the meantime, I will introduce myself. My name is Frank Fischer. I'm a professor of education and educational psychology here at the LMU. I'm also speaker of the Munich Center of Learning Sciences. And my original study was in psychology, and I did my thesis at the end of my master thesis in the end of my studies on visual attention and the use of eye tracking. That was a real challenge then. And I learned very soon, because we investigated screens and visual fatigue coming from working with these old, you know, remember them, the old screens, that you have to be very careful selecting your technology, because if you are not, then your research is quite soon outdated, and so was mine from my master's thesis. That was what I learned there. I did my PhD together with Heinz Mandl here in Munich already, with respect to problem-based learning and the use of computer-supported environments in medical education. And so from that point, I saw that defining technologies in a way that will last for at least a couple of years or some time, like hypermedia or like simulations and so on, that was a much better approach. With respect to collaboration, I think we will introduce, I will continue to introduce myself when I introduce the topic of today. But I will give it back to Susan now. So maybe should we just start with our talk now, or would you like to give us some more instructions? There will be There is a Dropbox link already, so maybe we copy that again into the, it's at the beginning of the chat where you can download the slides, and I would like to invite you and ask you to download that now and open the slides so that we so that you can follow more or less our talk.
Okay, so I'm in the process of downloading the slides. I think that we'll just follow the format that we've been following with these webinars, which is that the presenters will talk for a bit and then pose a question or an issue or two for us to think about, and then we'll come back together, have a little bit of time to think about it, and then come back together for a discussion. So if that's okay with you, Frank, I think we'll just I'll just hand it over to you and you can start.
Okay, thanks, Susan. And I think it's also good to start with thinking a little bit about the situation where we are in right now. So we are in a CCL environment, and we will come back to this specific CCL environment a couple of times during that session. So one question that Christoph, Ingo, and I were discussing a little bit before that meeting was, I mean, where do we all know what to do in this type of a CCL environment? For example, David, I think you are here for the first time. Yanis has been here already. You might have participated in other webinars or video conferences like that. But, well, where do you know what to do? Where do the speakers know? Where do the facilitator know? Where do the participants know that they should sit down? For example, at LMU, they sit at the table here, and that you should not press the interrupt button too often, and so on. Where do you know all this? And this is, I mean, this is one of the core questions of collaboration script research, I would say. The main idea here is that you are able to transfer knowledge on collaborative situations from other situations to this situation. And I think what Susan did, and also what the room where you're sitting in right now is doing with chairs and this environment with the button right below the big video screen. This is all, these are artifacts, and Susan Goldman gave us some clear instructions what we should do. We should remember what we did last time, more or less. She reminded us. So she more or less activated some prior knowledge on how to collaborate in order to make this more productive. And I think if you understand this, you have already understood the main idea behind collaboration script, at least with respect to the internal collaboration scripts and how they are activated and transferred into new situations. Maybe, if I may, I would give a couple of sentences as an introduction. The theoretical text that you received, that you hopefully read, this was a final, or let's say an intermediate final point in the script development and theory development process that we undertook for more than 10 years. And I think what we started from was from learning strategies research. I think many of us in collaborative script research started with learning strategies, and one of the original uses of cooperation scripts and collaboration scripts by Angela O'Donnell and others also were more in the direction of having a strategy for small group learning. So giving learning strategies for individuals in small groups to improve their individual knowledge gains. So this was one of the original thoughts here. Another origin or root was that of scripts in the way Roger Schenck and Abelson used it, which nowadays is more seen as a kind of rigid structure in that resides somewhere in your mind and helps you interpret sequences of events, which was used in early text comprehension, artificial intelligence research, and that has been more or less overcome by later work by Schenck and also by work of others And I think our work is also heading into a quite different direction, having a much more flexible structure idea behind what a collaboration script, at least an internal collaboration script, is. So when people participate in events, in social situations like this, they do not come as empty sheets or without any prior knowledge. They have internal structures that guide them. They will transfer something into this situation. This knowledge typically comes from experience. Many of you have participated in these webinar or type of webinar before, so you have already experience. But even if you don't have this specific experience, you have experience with other types of social situations, and it was not too difficult for you to transfer that into this situation. At least it was possible for you. A lot of this knowledge on how to collaborate is shared within communities and cultures, so there's a lot of shared collaboration script knowledge that people have. And the knowledge resulting from participating in these practices is shaped by this practice. So this is one of the basic assumptions, that if you participate in a social situation, in a social practice, then you are guided by some knowledge that you already bring into the situation, by artifacts and situational constraints that are there. But on the other hand, this new experience also will shape your new knowledge on this collaboration. So maybe I leave you with this level of introductory words, just categorizing a little bit our theoretical work. This was also an outcome of the publication practice that we had with the educational psychologists. So reviewers asked us to do this. So what are the grand theories that guided our theory building, or that are behind our theory? So basically it is a schema theory, at least we agreed on that. Upon that, it is a schema theory, but it has a very clear interface also to sociocultural theories of social practices. So it links social practices to individual cognition, and it has the idea of scaffolding included. So there is the idea that some pedagogical instructional approach might facilitate or mediate between the social practice and the individual cognition, help you to understand social practices, and help you build up functional cognitive structures that help you to participate on a higher level in these social practices. So in our theoretical model, there is a core idea of, I think we discussed that in the scaffolding webinar before. There is the idea of performance before competence. So there is the idea of giving support to individuals in social situations, so in order for them to be able to perform on a higher level than they would be spontaneously able to, by giving them specific types of support, and also, of course, with the idea to remove that support over time, so to have an individual being competent in a way to act on his or her own in these social situations. And I would like to hand it over now. This was a couple of introductory words from a very broad perspective. I would just now jump into what an internal script is. If you move to, I think this would be slide 3, we have an outline which is very, very simple. We will be talking about internal collaboration scripts, and we will be talking about external collaboration scripts, and you will work a lot on both internal and external collaboration scripts through that session. But first, Ingo Koller will introduce you to what an internal collaboration script is, or how we would suggest to structure that. Ingo.
Yeah, hello again from my side. As you see, I changed rooms and I can still have a look into my old office. That's good here via the video. I hope you can hear me better. If not, then please let me know. So I'm now talking about slide number 4, which is about the structure of internal collaboration scripts. So Frank has given you already a context or has talked about the context in which we are right now. So we are in the context of a webinar, and you could assume that you have knowledge about how webinars go. Maybe you don't have, didn't participate earlier in webinars, but at least you have participated in other kinds of seminars, and maybe you sort of selected this kind of script, so to speak, to help you make sense of the situation in which we are right now. So on the highest level, on the hierarchically highest level of an internal script, there is the so-called play component. The play component is a very abstracted representation of the situation in which you find yourself currently. The most well-known example that Shank himself gave was the restaurant script. So you have a script or a play representation of how things go in a restaurant, but you can also have such a kind of representation of how a seminar or even a webinar goes. Below the play level, there's the scene level. So what plays do is they pick certain scenes that make up the play, so to speak, and bring them into a certain sequence. So going back to what we experienced so far in this course today, you could have a representation, you might have had a representation even at the beginning, that the scene one will be something like a saying hello scene, so to speak, and scene two is maybe Susan as the moderator giving the overall intro to the course, and then it's handed over to one of the teachers to give a more concise introduction into the topic of our today's course, and so on. So a play puts together scenes in a certain sequence, and if you select a certain sequence of scenes, this guides the way you make sense of the situation in which you find yourself currently. It also makes you act more competently. So it's always this idea of internal scripts is twofold in a way. It helps you both understand the situation in which you are right now, or that you perceive right now, and it also helps you act competently in the situation. Below the scene level, there are scriptlets, and scriptlets are representations of the actions or activities that make up a scene, so to speak. So in the introduction scene, or the say hello scene, let's say that was scene one, we had scriptlets like somebody saying hello to the others, and then also clicking stop broadcasting, then somebody else clicking on start broadcasting, saying hello, also introducing him or herself, and that went on until we have heard about everyone's background. And just like that, also for other scenes, you can differentiate between different scriptlets. What these scriptlets also imply is that they are bound to certain roles. So right now we have at least three different roles. Heuristically, we can distinguish between the role of a moderator, that's Susan. We have the role of teachers, that's Frank, Christoph and me. And we have the roles of the participants. And based depending on what role somebody has, the scriptlets are attached to these roles. So saying hello or giving an overview over the course makes only sense for Frank in that sense, maybe as the teacher, and would not make sense that you as participants would give an overview over this session because you weren't involved in the planning. On the other hand, you could be asked to give your expectations maybe on how you think the course will run, but that would then be a different scriptlet that would be attached to your role. I think one important point about this concept of a script is, of internal scripts, is that such internal scripts are highly flexible. So you might be completely surprised by certain things that are happening right now. So if I would stand up and yell something or so, you would maybe evoke that you activate or select different scriptlets, maybe even unconsciously, come from different contexts that are not that don't fit into the context that we have right now. So these internal scripts are constantly and on the fly modifiable based on the way the situation is running and changing and being modified over time, also based on your personal goals, maybe. So at some point, maybe your goal is not so much about you want to learn more about internal scripts, but something about like, I just want to do something else as I'm sitting here and watching you. And then this internal script that you have selected is sort of shifting into a different context. Okay, Frank just wanted to say something, but he, oh yeah, there he is, so I hand over to Frank.
I just wanted to add, for those who were there for the last webinars, I wanted to remind you on one situation where the speaker suddenly had a phone call on his mobile phone and said, sorry folks, or excuse me folks, and he was away for like 10 minutes. And this caused a lot of confusion, I think among the facilitator, I have to admit, but also on the different sides of what to do now. So in which situation are we in now? Which play is that? I also think it's interesting that Ingo and Christoph were talking about teachers and instructors and lecturers, whereas, I had the idea of a speaker. I think there are quite different plays that are active in interpreting new situations, and I think that's that was quite clear from your introduction. Thanks, Ingo.
You're very welcome. Thank you for adding. Oh, Susan would like to say something. Okay, I stop broadcasting now.
So I have two questions about relationships of this work to other work that I want to put out there that we don't have to address now, but I kind of wanted to get them into the queue. When I was reading about scriptlets, I couldn't help but think about conversation routines that sociolinguists and psycholinguists have been analyzing for a long time, like telephone routines or ordering routines. And I wondered about whether we could think about scriptlets in that way. And I also, just a bigger question, keep in my mind thinking about all the work that's been done on cooperative learning. It's called cooperative learning at Johnson & Johnson's, and I didn't see that ever referenced in the article. So just two big, sort of big picture relationship questions that I wanted to put out there for people to maybe keep in the back of their minds, not to be answered necessarily right at the minute.
Yeah, thank you, Susan, for these questions. I think they are really interesting. I would also, just as a preliminary answer right now for your first question, I would definitely say that conversation routines could be labeled as scriptlets. So I think there is a very close relation between the terms. I think the idea of an internal script, although we now apply it in a social context, in a collaborative context, and the paper talks also about only collaborative learning, so to speak. But I think the idea of a script in general maybe does not have to be inherently social all the time. So there are also probably other scriptlets at stake, of course, if you do things maybe not in a social situation. Okay, thank you. And the relation to cooperative learning, well, maybe I would like to postpone that question to have a chance to think a bit more deeply about it. So I would like to try to get back to that later, if that's okay for you.
Well, I have a short answer to that. We can discuss that in more detail so later on. So we also have sometimes discussions about cooperative learning and collaborative learning and what is the difference. I'm not sure if we want to discuss that today, but one of the main ideas behind cooperative learning always was to have individuals learn better through cooperation. And this cooperation was often a way of sharing the work or distributing the tasks and putting them together a bit and supporting motivation. There are, of course, different approaches. I think with, for example, Alison King's work, where it comes more to having thought-provoking questions and where the structure that is given to the cooperative situation is more on the level of making people think and not just making people motivated to help others and contribute to a joint product, but also to support the students on the level of their collaboration skills, let's say, collaboration competence, to be better able to support people and to make other people think and to contribute to this joint thinking. That's my quick answer. And I would also agree with what Ingo said, that collaboration scripts would not stop as a collaboration competence or a cooperation competence. So I think the link between social practices and individual reasoning is more the scope of this theory. And some of the reasoning skills that might develop through participation in social practices are social in nature, others are not. And some of the scriptlets can also be translated as skills and not necessarily collaboration skills, but really on a skill level. I think what Daniel did for most of us at the beginning of this session, telling us, well, if you want to test your equipment, press the start broadcasting or join the queue button, and then talk, and then stop talking by pressing the stop broadcasting button again. This is really something on a scriptlet level. You still have to know a lot. You have to know what a button is, how to click it, and so on. So you still have to transfer a lot of knowledge into the situation, but this is really on a level where normally you have a lot of people in cooperative learning and collaborative learning being hesitating, thinking that this is a good way to structure collaboration. But what we also saw and what Daniel did is this was necessary because we didn't know about that. So if you don't have the skills to participate in collaboration, then sometimes it's even necessary to go down to the skill level to help people to engage in collaborative learning.
Okay, thank you very much. I would propose maybe to move on in the slides and go to the first activity, but of course please interrupt if there are any questions or anything that you need to know right now that was unclear, please feel free to do so. As long as this isn't doing, then I would like to go on to slide number 5, which describes the first of two tasks that we have for you. And the first task is, I think, when given this concept of what an internal script is and of what components it consists, I think a very immediate question is, how can we actually measure people's internal scripts? And that's, I think, a real, there is not much research yet about this, at least in research on collaborative learning, how you can actually measure internal scripts. And therefore, we thought it would be a good task maybe to have you discuss or reflect on how an internal collaboration script for a webinar, so what kinds of knowledge sort of is activated and selected in the situation which we are right now, and how this knowledge could be measured in a valid way. And I think there are three issues attached to this, or three, let's say, challenges attached to this. I think Frank said it, and I try to make the point too, that scripts have two functions. So on the one hand, they help us understand certain situations better. Like you have some knowledge selected, maybe unconsciously, that helps you make sense of the situation in which you are right now. But it also helps you to act more competently in that situation. So as Frank gave the example of, no one of you is constantly clicking on the interrupt button, although the affordance would be there, actually, you could do that, but nobody is doing that. So an internal script is also important for, how to inform the way you act in a certain situation. And I think a measure of an internal script should reflect both functions of an internal script. So how can you get to the understand part, so to speak, and how can you get closer to the acting part of or the acting function of internal scripts? And a third very, I think, a really big challenge in how to measure internal scripts lies in the fact that these internal scripts are highly flexible and are constant, or at least have the potential to be constantly changed as the situation unfolds. We have had several examples beforehand Frank gave some of them, what happens if the phone rings, for example, of some of the students. You constantly sort of adjust the play, and maybe, or maybe only the scenes, or maybe only the scriptlets, to make sense out of the situation as it may surprisingly have evolved differently than what from what you thought beforehand. So so the idea would be, you would be asked to think about how you would measure the participants, so actually your internal scripts relating to the situation in which we are right now, to the webinar. I hope the instruction has been clear. If not, please let me know and I'll try to put it differently again. The idea would be that you have, I would not say 15 minutes, I would say maybe 5 minutes right now to discuss this. The ones of you who are in a social situation, in a face-to-face social situation right now, maybe can discuss this. And the ones of you who are sitting alone in front of your computers, maybe can just reflect on that individually. Is that okay for everyone? Okay, great. So, yeah, I will start broadcasting again in 5 minutes. And let's then collect your ideas. Okay, I'm very curious about your ideas and your thoughts on how to measure internal webinar scripts. So I just hand over to whoever would like to start.
Well, I only have for the act part. I was thinking like for this section. We can define different moves that are valid. So each role has a set of different moves, and then these moves are valid only within a set of states. For instance, like role A can interrupt when role B is talking. So, and to measure this, we can define a set of tasks or exercises when this set of valid moves based on the states are exercised, and then just provide a grade according to this.
Okay, thank you very much. So from how far I understood it, you would propose to look at the behavior, right, of the people who are participating in the situation. That's what I got from it. Is that correct? Did I get that right?
Yes, based on a set of states and valid moves and the roles. Yeah.
We were thinking about different measuring different ways to measure the idea of script, internal scripts. So we would start with the narrative way. So at the beginning, we want someone to write down what he was thinking about what a webinar could be, if it's like a lecture or another seminar. And when he's behaving in the webinar, then we would look for different breaks. So because we thought that as long as it's an automatical thing, like you're going to a lecture, you're sitting down, or you're going to a seminar and you're sitting down and you're trying to hide in front of the lecturer, that we suppose there would be breaks between the when there's a change in an internal script. In addition to that, we were searching for skin factors or something in the pupils that may relate to a change of internal script. There are some studies on concentration in seminars where that worked, that there's a different way how the skin behaves when their concentration fades, and perhaps that could work here as well when you are anxious, that relates to an idea. And we want to mix the different methods, as we found every one of them has a real limitation on what we were thinking.
Yeah, and we were not able to discuss the third question because we only had 5 minutes instead of 15.
Okay, so these are interesting thoughts. Thank you very much. The physiological measures would really be something that would be innovative in that kind of research. I don't know any research in the scripting area that has gone beyond looking at behavior, and you what you also suggested the kind of narratives, if I understood it correctly, which would be sort of, you know, ask people how they think a webinar would run, for example. I mean, that's just something else. It's not a real acting measure. It would be rather maybe an understanding related measure. Okay, but I'm still curious for other hints and other suggestions.
Well, when I think about trying to understand what's inside of a person, I think of James G's discourse analysis method, where he looks at grammar and word choice, grammar choice and word choice, to try and understand what a person is constructing, what they're trying to construct in reality, how they're trying to build reality. So I would say using discourse analysis.
Yes, thank you very much. I think this is absolutely at the heart of collaborative learning research. I mean, there is discourse happening naturally, and I think I would maybe subsume that under behavior, so to speak. I mean, this is a particular kind of behavior that you can really observe how people talk to each other, and that's just another way having an interface into the internal scripts of people in a social situation as we have it right now here in the webinar. Okay, are there further suggestions?
I was thinking something about like a questionnaire where you ask them about certain things you want to know about how the webinar was organized, something like that.
Yes, sure, questionnaires would also be another option. We tried it also earlier with this. For example, we gave students a fictitious protocol of how they talk to each other, and they should analyze this protocol, and that way we try to get to their internal argumentation scripts, so to speak. So we were interested in argumentation, and that was questionnaire based. Absolutely, I think this is also another option to do this.
I think what would really be interesting is to let them rate certain situations, because this internal script idea is also very unconscious, right? So when you get like triggered from a situation, then this script gets triggered, and you can like see very well the internal scripts of the persons, right? So that would be my idea, to let them rate situations which are good or bad and expert rated. Yeah.
Thanks, Christian. I think that's a very good point also to make maybe one distinction even clearer. I think you were talking about, Christian, you were talking about scripts, whole scripts. And I think this is something we gave up over the years, that there is a whole script that is transferred to a situation. This is normally maybe not the case if you go to a new situation. because I think it's maybe more helpful, more meaningful to talk about script components that are transferred. And I think that will make the situation much more complicated. I hope that Ingo has some resolution for that, because he put that question on the slide, how to deal with the flexible character of internal scripts. So if you speak about different components and having a scene component transferred to a situation together with a couple of scriptlets, but this was so far unrelated to the play of webinar, like many people transfer a kind of invited seminar script to a webinar, but simply soon find out that it's not the same thing. You have breaks with small group discussions, reflections, and so on. So there is a difference. So how to deal with measuring internal scripts when we conceptualize them as extremely flexible, flexibly adapting to changing situations?
Yes, I think the reason why I put that question up is because I really find that a huge challenge. So I think it's really, you know, there are good ideas needed to really get into or get an interface into how people actually can flexibly change their internal scripts in a particular situation. Maybe if you don't mind, I would like to go to the next slide, which is slide number 6, which describes a bit how we approach the measurement of internal scripts in a medical education project right now. This project is being conducted by Esther Beltermann and colleagues, and it's about internal ward round projects. I will go back to that question later. Thank you. So what are ward rounds? Ward rounds, if you have ever been to the hospital as a patient, you know what a ward round is. So you are lying in your bed, and then all of a sudden the door goes up and is opened, and a group of people in white clothes comes in, the doctors and nurses and so on, and they are visiting every patient at their bed, asking about his state right now, about doing some small examinations, maybe talking about further treatment and so on. So you could perceive, I'm now on slide number 7, you could perceive a ward round as a social situation because it involves different people. There are several possible participants, like physicians at different expertise levels. Can be a senior physician or a ward physician or a junior physician. Also students in their practical year. Also medical students, nurses, and of course the patient is involved too. The way Esther is analyzing the internal scripts is a two-step process to take into account the idea of scripts helping in actions or for actions, and also helping for understanding. So for the action part, what we are doing there is that we actually observe ward rounds that we sort of simulate, or we use a simulated patient, so it's not a real patient, but it's a patient who was instructed to pretend or simulate certain symptoms and to respond to certain questions in specific ways. And so this person is lying on the bed, and then the door is opened, and then the group of physicians and medical students and so on goes enters that situation, and you can that way videotape what is going on in that situation, and that can be an interface into the acting part, so to speak, of the internal scripts. On the other side, we are running interviews with all the participants later on, except for the patient, I guess, but for all the other participants, we are running interviews, and we are doing that in a very structured way via this structure formation technique that is written down on the slide. So the idea is, as you are talking to your interview partner, you are having a deck of cards, maybe color-coded in different ways, for example, to represent different roles that are in the situation. And as you are interviewing the other person, for example, with questions like, okay, so what is the first phase, which corresponds to the scene idea, what is the first phase in a ward round, and who's doing what during that phase and what sequence and so on, then you're on the script that level, and on the role level, you're writing that down as you're talking to that other person. The good thing about this is that at the end of this process, you have on your table like a ready structure, so to speak, that came out of the interview. And as the interview partner is still there, you can ask the interview partner whether you got that right? Whether the kinds of activities were the ones that the interviewee told you about, or whether the faces are in the right sequence and so on. And so the interview partner can still shift cards around. The good thing in terms of economy or economical perspective is that you don't have to go back to the audio necessarily to find out about people's internal scripts, but you can just look at the structure that is being laid. I have brought two slides, slide number 8 and slide number 10, just to show how that looked like. I think slide number 8 was the script that was laid by a student. So on the top level you see the faces. It's all in German, unfortunately. But these are the faces, so to speak, the scenes that talked about. And below that you have color-coded different cards that represent activities that are to be shown by the different participants in the situation. On slide number 9, you see, I think it's a structure that was laid by a physician that I think also was a bit more sophisticated, had more scriptlets and so on that were being mentioned. And that's basically the idea of the whole project, by identifying sort of differences between between like medical students' internal ward-round scripts and professional medical people's internal ward-round scripts. This can be informative to develop an intervention directed at increasing medical students' ward-round competence or internal scripts, if you will. Gotta check my slides right now. Yeah, just very briefly about the preliminary results. So we are actually still in the data collection, so I cannot talk too much about the results. But what we are doing right now is we are closely analyzing the structures that came from the interviews. We did not look into the videos yet. That will be also a challenge to identify scriptlets and scenes and so on there. Preliminary results were that ward physicians mentioned significantly more scenes than medical students, so it seems like that they have more knowledge of like a more detailed knowledge about ward rounds and how they run than medical students. But surprisingly, we also found that people on the lowest and on the highest expertise levels, so medical students on the lowest level or end on the low end, and ward physicians and how are the others called, senior physicians on the highest end of expertise, that they have been producing more scriptlets than medical doctors on intermediate levels of expertise. So I cannot, you know, I mean, this is very preliminary in the sense of that we just checked for the numbers right now of scenes and scriptlets that were expressed. We are currently also looking at the types of scenes and scriptlets that have been expressed. So I think this is going to be very interesting to see whether medical students and medical professionals differ on the kinds of scenes and scriptlets that they would show in such a, or that they would regard as typical for a ward-round situation. And based on differences, as I said earlier, between the students and the more experienced professionals, we hope to get some hints towards how a good intervention would look like. Okay, could you give an example of a scriptlet or two in this situation? You know, the slides that I have are so small right now. I gotta look into my PowerPoint. Wait a minute. For example, on slide number 8, there is, for example, at the first orange card, this is a scriptlet that somebody attributed to the senior physician, and it says a question or ask the patient a question on how he's feeling right now. So that would be one scriptlet that that person, I think it was a medical student, would expect from the senior physician to ask in that situation. And then there's another question, and are the types of scriptlets different between the two groups? I think this is exactly what we would like to find out now. So far we only really checked the number of scenes and scriptlets and have already found some differences. Not all of them we can really make sense of so far, but right now we have also developed a coding scheme to sort of categorize certain scenes and activities in a similar way. And we are interested in whether medical students and medical professionals differ in the types of scenes and types of scriptlets that they see typical for ward-round situation. Maybe just one more thing to add for the flexibility issue. I think also here, I think we could still do better in terms of getting to the flexibility part of it. I think we have at least each ward-round team is acting in two different situations, at least. I mean, it's better than in one, but it's certainly not enough to look into or to get data about in what possible ways such internal scripts can develop as the situation is changing. At least we label these scripts are that we get from the videos. I think that's an open and interesting question that we will have a look at. But now, Frank, I think you wanted to add something.
I just wanted to add that I think we can see from the selection of this example also that this work is still in some early stages. So Ingo did some work several years ago in his PhD on measuring internal scripts in a different way, in the kind of protocol way that he mentioned before. And these are now additional next steps to do that. Maybe I think at this point we can just say, well, it's in an early stage. And maybe Ingo, if you could remind us what, or also Christoph, and then we could go on. Why do we need all this? Why do we need the knowledge on internal scripts? I think that is the key question for today. Why is it important to be informed also as a teacher on the internal scripts of learners?
So the main reason why we are interested in internal collaboration scripts and why we think that instructors should be interested in internal collaboration scripts is that this is basically the raw material that you draw upon when trying to influence or affect CCL practice in the direction that it fosters learning outcomes. So our general idea is that when we apply external collaboration scripts, which is the topic of the second half of this webinar, then we basically do nothing more than triggering certain lower level components of internal collaboration scripts that people already have. So this is the main reason why we think it's important to know the internal collaboration scripts. Now there's a little bit going on in the chat which I just wasn't able to follow. We were just discussing whether there are any questions and whether we should give the opportunity to ask them right now in the video. So is there anything? Okay, so if there are not any urgent questions at that point, we would in fact move on to the external collaboration script part. So what we would like to talk about is first what external collaboration scripts are, how they affect CCL practices and learning, and also maybe at the end why some people are afraid of overscripting. So I just like to move on to the slide number 12, which you already have. There are two definitions which we provided there. One is from Koller, Fischer and Hesse from the 2006 review paper, which says that they are interaction-related scaffolds that specify, sequence and distribute activities and roles among the learners in a small group. And in our more recent publication on the script theory of guidance, we added another idea which we regard as important, which has to do with the way how external collaboration scripts influence collaborative situations. And this involves the aspect of, on the one hand, facilitating and on the other hand, inhibiting the application of certain internal collaboration script components that the learners or the participants in the situation already have. And the way external collaboration scripts are structured according to our view is displayed on the next slide, number 13. And if you can, I would recommend that you look at this slide in an animated mode. So if you have a look at it in the display mode, then you can see more precisely than on a printout what makes up a certain script component. So basically, the external script components are highly parallel to the internal script components. So we have scaffolds on four levels, if you will, and the first level would be obviously the play scaffold level. So play scaffold, according to our view, comprises prompts that relate to the components of a play, which on the next level are the scenes. So a play scaffold would basically consist of such prompts. And in complete analogy to that, a scene scaffold would be one that contains prompts that trigger the scriptlet level components of an internal collaboration script. And below that, there could even be a scriptlet scaffold if that's necessary. So if learners lack the prerequisite lower level skills that constitute some scriptlet, then a scriptlet scaffold could contain prompts that would trigger those lower level activities. And basically, in a different direction to that, crossing basically this differentiation, are the role scaffolds, because they transcend individual scenes and would specify certain activities within scenes which are associated with the scriptlets there. So to give you an example, we took a collaboration script from a research project of ours in which Frank, Ingo and I were involved, and it is a collaboration script for collaborative online search. So in an inquiry learning environment, learners were supposed to arrive at a reason position concerning genetically modified food. And to that purpose, we asked them to conduct online searches using Google, and we built a collaboration script involving two roles for learners, which were supposed to sit next to each other in front of two computers. So each of the learners in such a diet would have their own computer. The two computers were connected. So whenever anybody in the group would click on a link or move to a different page, this would come up on the screens of both learners. And we used this setting with the two computers to provide role-specific support for both of the learners. And if you move through the next three slides, which are the numbers 14 to 16, you can see scaffolds of an external collaboration script on three different levels. So on the first level, which is on slide 14, you can see one prompt leads to the play scaffold level, and it says evaluation of the results page. So it just specifies the scene that this now has to do with evaluating what's going on the page, and it would be followed obviously by other prompts of the same kind when people, for example, move to one of those external web pages. On the next slide, number 15, you can see one more level of this collaboration script, which in this case involves three prompts, and by that this makes it a scene scaffold, because the scene of the evaluation of the results page now is specified on the activity level more precisely. And moving one slide further to number 16, we even have an example here of scriptlet scaffolds that include prompts for all the lower level activities that are involved in conducting those activities on the scriptlet level. So on the one hand, maybe it's important to emphasize that this collaboration script, external collaboration script, is maybe not very prototypical in the way it looks and feels when you're using it, but it's highly prototypical for what we regard as the structure of an external collaboration script in the script theory of guidance. For that purpose, it's quite close to the idea of having scaffolds on three levels: play, scene, and scriptlet levels. And what is also involved here, but not in such a transparent way, is that we have a distribution of those activities to the two roles I mentioned at the beginning. So the learners would sit next to each other weren't supposed to be doing precisely the same thing, but rather one would basically conduct the online search and the other person would have a more metacognitive role of commenting on the ideas that the person conducting the search has, for example, suggestions for search terms, suggestions for which link to click on the results page, or also comments on the evaluations uttered by the person conducting the search about the links or about the information that can be found on an external web page. What we also wanted to present to you was just some very brief overview concerning empirical research about the effectiveness of external collaboration script. We conducted a meta-analysis. This was done by Fides Vogel together with the three of us, and we have contrived some main results here on slide number 17, which differentiates the effects of external collaboration scripts on two kinds of learning outcomes, the domain-specific ones and domain general ones. But if you think about the kinds of research studies that are conducted in CSCL, then, for example, it's often a goal to foster things like inquiry skills, argumentation, online search competence in the case that I just mentioned before. So we have many skills as intended learning outcomes that are to some extent domain general, or at least crossing the boundaries of domains. And on the other hand, of course, a lot of this is done in order to achieve some kind of content area learning within physics, biology, psychology, if we do this on an undergraduate level, for example. So there are the domain-specific learning outcomes that are regarded as important as well. And the findings in this respect are quite clear. It can be shown that collaboration scripts may have an effect on domain-specific learning outcomes, but it's much more impressive when it comes to domain general learning outcomes. So the more social skills, those aspects of the collaborative situation seems to be the thing that basically is transformed into a learning outcome. A skill or competences that can be used in other situations as well, such as argumentation or collaboration skills or online example. We also have a little bit more detailed findings concerning the learning processes. In this case, in the meta-analysis that Fridays is conducting, we differentiated three of the levels of the external collaboration scripts which I presented. So we basically identified what is the most prominent level that a script, that an external collaboration script targets, and by that we classified scripts as being mainly focused on the play level or on the scene level or on the scripted level. And we also differentiated learning outcomes. This helps. On the learning processes, we differentiated the more content-related and the more social-related ones. And the findings suggest that when you look at the content, scripts that mainly focus on the scene level in general tend to be the ones that are most effective. At least they are significantly more effective than scripts on the play level. Whereas in terms of social learning process aspects, there are no significant differences. You can see that there are some descriptive differences in these patterns. So play and scene levels and scripted levels are ordered in that way, with the first two being significant. But overall, the three of those script levels don't differ from each other. So both on the outcome and on the process level, obviously there is evidence which we could integrate in this meta-analysis that external collaboration scripts can have beneficial effect, to bring it to that short summary. So I think I leave it there for now and give you the opportunity to ask questions about external collaboration scripts. Yes, of course, I can give some more background about this methodology. The meta-analysis approach intends to integrate research findings from empirical studies, mainly quantitative empirical studies, and do this in an objective way and in a quantitative way by summarizing effect sizes, basically. So this means that if you have an experiment that finds an effect of a collaboration script on learning processes or outcomes, this would be quantified as an effect size within this single study, and the meta-analysis integrates those findings. So what we meta-analyzed, to come to your second question, is that experimental and quasi-experimental studies in CSCL that compared external collaboration scripts to some situation in which there was no such collaboration support. And the effects of those external collaboration scripts with respect to learning processes such as argumentation quality or participation or transactivity, and also with respect to those different kinds of learning outcomes that I mentioned, domain-specific and domain-general ones. Does this answer your questions?
I have a question regarding slide 17, the domain-specific part. I wanted to know, what did you measure? Was it only knowledge or also methods? Because domain-specific could mean a lot.
Well, we didn't measure this because it was the individual studies who measured that, but you could look at some of those studies that are, of course, also part of this meta-analysis. Maybe Ingo can also say a little bit about this. There are studies that have tests, knowledge tests, for example, knowledge in biology. From our lab, there are at least two or three in that direction. We have other studies that measure the application of domain-specific knowledge, in that case about psychological theory, and the application of this knowledge to cases, so it's more application-oriented kind of knowledge. And I think there are also studies in which this is more related to methods, but I think this is the minority, if that's correct.
Yeah.
In terms of the interaction of internal and external scripts, there is nothing new to report upon from this meta-analysis, because there it wasn't possible to test for that, simply because most people don't report anything about the internal collaboration scripts of their participants. So basically what we could say is still what Ingo can say after his dissertation.
Yeah, I mean, what I did in my dissertation work was, as I said earlier, I tried to measure, like, let's say, the sophistication or structuredness of people, of students' internal argumentation-related scripts by having them analyze a fictitious protocol of an argumentative talk, so to speak. And the task for the students was to identify in what cases or at what instances this discussion was good in terms of argumentation, and which instance was not so good. For example, in which instances did somebody just give a claim but not give evidence to support the claim, or maybe in other instances somebody was really good at integrating different viewpoints that were expressed by the two learners beforehand. And based on that, we differentiated between students with, let's say, high structured internal scripts, so those who were rather good at that task, and students with low structured internal scripts, those who were not really good at that task. And we sent them through an inquiry learning environment, a computer-based inquiry learning environment, and this inquiry learning environment was equipped either with a collaboration script, an external collaboration script, or not. And what we found was basically the external collaboration script was only present at certain points in the process of the web-based learning environment. So there were also instances in which learners did not have to follow any sort of external scaffold on how to argue with each other. And what we found was that when the external script was present, so when it was really salient that they should, for example, substantiate their claims with evidence or produce counter-arguments or something like that, we did find that all the students, basically, also the ones who had high-structured internal scripts, would benefit from this kind of external scaffold in terms of the process. So that would mean they then really created and produced more substantiated arguments, more counter-arguments, more integrations, and so on, than students who would not be equipped with an external script. On the other hand, as soon as this external script wasn't visible anymore and students were not like prompted on how to argue with each other, we saw that the external script did not make any effect anymore. So in that situation, it was really a huge effect then again of the internal scripts. So in that sense, that people or students who were diagnosed as having a high structured internal script at the beginning would also in the process produce more more arguments that were based on evidence, for example, would produce more counter arguments and so on. So what that told us was that it's really a difficult question how to help students to internalize the strategy that an external script would like them to acquire. It's a really difficult thing, because, and I think it's not surprising that it's difficult, because these internal scripts typically evolve and develop over a long, long period of time. So it's very difficult to expect that from, like, let's say 20 minutes of following an external script on how to argue with each other, that really enters your repertoire and you will really work with this on. And we have run several studies after that where we looked at ways on how to maybe increase the internalization of such an external script, for example through fading or through adaptable scripting or adaptive scripting. And I think from my side I can say fading, at least as long as it is not adaptive as it is a fixed kind of reduction of steps and of prompts for different steps, that didn't really work in our study. But what does work quite well is have students decide on their own on how much script, so to speak, external script they would like to have for the next task. There we found that this made the script more effective compared to a script that was not adaptable, that was constantly there. There in one study we found positive effects.
That's very interesting. I also wondered about the development of internal scripts and wondering whether you think that could depend on experiencing the external scaffold in multiple contexts.
So this relates basically to the problem of transfer, and I think we haven't discussed this really, but I think it's quite close to the view that we have, that we have the same ideas about this as in all kinds of situations in which transfer is a problem, that basically after arriving at an understanding of what's important in a situation, what works, experiencing this in one situation, you need the variety of situations in order to be able to transfer this to other cases of collaboration. I don't know if I'm saying this correctly for everybody, but you can jump in if you see it differently, I think. If nobody does, Frank doesn't seem to want to, oh, he wants to.
I just wanted to add, if we think about transfer theories like Greenough's, for example, it is about the similarity of activities, or that you go through activities several times or over and over again, that you have your cognitive representation of how to act and how to understand parts of this activity. And if a situation or this activity has some similarity also in other domains, I think that then it is likely that the internal script at least can be transferred. I think a very relevant question still is how to transfer the scaffolds in addition to this new situation. So is that in analogy to this internal script transfer idea? And then I wanted to comment quickly, because I think we have to move on then. We don't have much time left. The internalization question. I think we started with a Vygotskian idea of internalization. There is some discourse outside, some discussion and some argumentation, social argumentation situation, and this might result in some reasoning patterns. And this is the idea of internalization. And I think maybe we moved on in that direction, or even went beyond that, in assuming that maybe it's not an internalization of new scriptlets and new scenes and new roles and so on. Coming from a schema theory, you would rather say it's about recruiting different components of scripts, like a scene, like a scriptlet, like a role from different plays that are represented in a human mind. And if this is successfully done, then this constellation will be used again in a similar situation or situational change. And so that would be my current understanding of what internalization is. Any other comments, critical comments, friendly comments, questions, before we move to our last task, transfer task, basically?
Okay, since there don't seem to be any questions at that point, I just there was one in the chat. Yannis had a question concerning the processes, social quality and content quality on the different levels. Well, basically, these bars reflect what people did in their studies, and what is behind, for example, social quality are such aspects as transactivity or argument quality. And behind the content quality measures, there are the dependent variables in studies that had a look at whether this was basically conceptually correct, what was used there. So I hope that this answers the question. And with this, I'd like to move on to our, as Frank said, our final task, which you can find on slide 19. So we would like to ask you to develop an external collaboration script for a webinar such as this one. So it says a collaboration script that guides the interactions between the instructors and the students within this flash meeting in a way that will likely yield positive effects in terms of individual, domain-specific, and domain-general learning outcomes. And we won't do this for 20 minutes now, I think, but rather, as we had this before, we ask you to reflect for 5 minutes and start broadcasting then.
I just wanted to remind you on the, there is a slide with the definitions of these external collaboration scripts. And if you look at the second definition, this would be my suggestion to use that as a starting point. So if you consider external collaboration scripts not as something to prescribe individuals' behavior in a social situation, but rather as a scaffolding that helps people to transfer components of internal scripts that you think are relevant into that situation. So it's more helping people to transfer components that you think are might be productive in a situation to that situation that would maybe not be spontaneously transferred. Hope that is clear, or it might become clearer when you are working on this task.
Okay, so now we would like to hear a little bit about the ideas that you had. Maybe we don't want to ask all of you to present your ideas, but maybe you have something interesting which you would like to share with us. So then we are very interested to hear that.
Seems like you need more time, is that right? Or just let us know what's going on in your minds and in your discussions.
No, because we haven't discussed anything.
Okay, so we've been discussing for a moment, but there are some voices here that would really like to hear the part of the overscripting, and as we're already 12 minutes over the time, we'd really like to proceed with that.
Just quickly, what I was thinking is a way to try and call forth the internal scripts in this webinar situation would be to use maybe an analogy, trying to set the context, saying that, okay, we're trying to recreate a situation as if we were all sitting together in the same room to discuss this. Also questions such as, so why are you here? What are your motivations? let's discuss our goals, things like that.
So maybe if there's one further idea from this task that you would present, then we move on to the overscripting part. So is there another response to the task?
So we've been thinking about developing a script which on the one hand is on the play, but on the other hand is especially on the role, because we were thinking this is a bit, well, we've been talking about direct instruction before, and there would be a script needed to say to us PhD students, don't be a PhD student, but let just be on the same level as everyone else, and to get into this role by an external script.
Okay, I think these are interesting suggestions from both of you, also from David. I think as far as I got it, David would create and present an external script that sort of targets especially like early phases in the collaboration, as you were saying, what are your plans, what is your motivation to be a part of that webinar. And I think that's an important point, and the question would be if you would also need to develop an external script for later phases of the webinar. For example, I could imagine an external script that you could have received, maybe that would that would prescribe something like who has to make a suggestion on how an external script would look like, and who of you should comment on that, and something like that. I mean, there would be a script that would be more closely related then to the actual task, so to speak. And I think this is another option, so to speak, where an external script could be targeted at. For the LMU suggestion, as far as I understood, I mean, you were talking about the different levels, the play level and the scene level and so on. And I think, yeah, I mean, it's a really big question. I think that relates already to the overscripting question. Depending on students' internal scripts, and you could assume maybe that university students or doctoral students that you are, for example, already have internal scripts that are more advanced and more sophisticated than, let's say, sixth graders' internal scripts on certain communication strategies, maybe, for example. A real big question is, okay, should you then really go all the way down to the script that level to structure the communication and interaction within the group, or should you leave it, for example, at the play level? And I think this is something that really has to do with the overscripting idea. That is the final topic for today. But if somebody wants to add or ask something, please go ahead.
I just wanted to add maybe also as a starting point or a linking point, to the overscripting question. I think just asking people or telling people now we will have a webinar is an instruction or is information for participants that is often given, and it's sometimes called a macro script. Also, if you go down one level and say, well, this webinar has different phases, like an introduction, then speakers will speak for a while, then there will be a discussion, questions depending on the activity of the participants, then there will be a summary at the end by the facilitator or whatever. Sometimes this is enough. And I think the script theory of guidance says this is enough if you have participants who have all the necessary scriptlets at hand to just participate with that information. If the lower level knowledge, the scriptlet knowledge, the role knowledge and so on is not available, then this is not enough, and then we would talk of underscripting. So this would be underscripting. That does not mean that it will not work at all, but people will bring different ideas to the situation, different interpretations, and maybe will not be able to participate. As I mentioned before, if you don't know that you have to press the start broadcasting button, this is a scriptlet in the end, then you cannot participate. Can just listen. That's your disadvantage then. So maybe that would be my introduction to the overscripting, underscripting topic. But maybe we can just jump into this topic. Maybe LMU has to say something. We have some participants on the LMU side who are now at the Saarland University, who even did important scientific work on the overscripting questions.
Apparently the LMU Saarland collaboration doesn't want to say something on this. So maybe we can just move on to the overscripting part that Frank already has started. So as probably most of you, or even all of you know, overscripting is a kind of war cry which was initiated by Pierre Dillenburg against microscripts. And the main problem that he saw with external microscripts was that they would basically interfere with a naturally occurring collaboration and might disturb this. So this is the main problem that he sees with external scripting that is located more on a micro level. And also issues related to overscripting could be located on a cognitive and on a motivational level. So on the cognitive level, sometimes it is argued that the processing of external collaboration scripts itself can cause cognitive load and thereby interfere with learning, or even not just learning, also the processing of the content and the collaboration itself. And on the motivational level, one could think of basically two mechanisms that even work against each other. One would be that a collaboration script, in the way we presented it, might help learners to basically tackle a collaborative situation and thereby also cause some increased feeling of competence, which according to the self-determination theory of DC and Ryan should be positive for intrinsic motivation. And on the other hand, what is often used as an argument that counteracts this this view is that an external collaboration script somehow limits the opportunities or the options that a learner has, narrows down the available affordances, and thereby might lead to a lower feeling of autonomy, which again according to the self-determination theory of Diesner and Ryan would have an effect, but in this case a negative one, on intrinsic motivation. So using self-determination theory and applying this to the idea that could be too much of scripting, this could either mean that we have negative effects on collaborative learning and its outcomes. In some cases, it could also mean that there might be a beneficial effect, but the problems that might occur are quite clear from that, I think. So I now first hand over to LMU before coming maybe to some possible rebuttals or also solutions to these problems.
Yeah. The problem what we had when we did this study on overscripting, so I know I can add something to that, was that we had a real problem to define what Christoph said, that there could be different angles what overscripting actually is. So from one hand, there could be overscripting is you give too much script beforehand, or you just don't fade it out naturally. And we found that the definition of overscripting at that point quite complicated.
So this is a very interesting issue with overscripting, which you point to. The over in overscripting implies that there is something that's too much. And the question is, what is the limit for too much? And if you look at the natural criteria which you would apply to some instructional method for being too much is whether it hinders learning. And where do we have to look if we want to know if something hinders learning? We have to look at the learning processes and outcomes, our dependent variables in our experiments. So basically, overscripting, that's why I called it a war cry, is basically just a way of labeling a certain kind of research and claiming that it produces negative effects on learning, which most scripts that have been used in the CCL research field, as we've shown you before, did not have negative effects on learning. There are very few studies which produce negative effects on learning, and there are several that produced substantial beneficial effects on learning. So the problem is not so much that there is empirical evidence against overscripting, but rather that the whole idea of overscripting puts into the definition of a term something that can only be seen at the side of the dependent variables. And this makes it something that you can't manipulate as an independent variable. If you have to wait for the results, you can't know whether you have manipulated overscripting or not. It's more like a general warning that there might be something like overscripting that you can see in the results on the side of the processes and the learning outcomes. But the interesting thing, and I'd like to emphasize this, that it's not that we like to reject this idea by Pierre Dillenburg outright and say this is something we regard as not very helpful, but rather it has brought us forward very much and moved us forward in this discussion about how to view external and internal collaboration scripts and how they interact. And I'd like to emphasize this, that what we wrote in our article in the Education Psychologist, that we regard external collaboration scripts as things, as scaffolds that should be directed at specific levels of internal collaboration scripts that are available to the learners, that we need diagnosis of the internal collaboration scripts of the learners, and the optimal scripting level principle says that external guidance will be most effective if it's targeted at the highest level of internal collaboration scripts that is available to the learners. And this means that they are dynamically reconfigured, and external collaboration scripts contribute to this by simply triggering certain available internal collaboration scripts and not going to deeper levels and structuring more than is necessary.
So I think this discussion is really interesting. It can go on for a long time, but I'm very aware of the fact that we're about at least 15 minutes over, perhaps more, and I realize that people have other things they have to do, including myself. And so what I'd like to do is just make a comment about this discussion of overscripting and to try and relate it to this notion of adaptive scripting and dynamic scripting. By analogy, I'm reminded of those prompts that come up when you're trying to do stuff on your computer and it says, it asks you, you know, like, click here if you never want to see this prompt again. When we think about this external scripting, it might be that way of getting the learner to metacognitively sort of evaluate, do I really need this external scaffold anymore or not? And if not, just make it go away and never come back again, or unless, you know, you ask for it again, so that you could regulate whether the scaffold is on or off. Might be one way to investigate people's kind of facility with developing these, whatever it is that's being scaffolded, as well as their metacognitive awareness of their how the interaction is actually proceeding. So just some thoughts. I'm going to turn this back to the presenter group to make some final comments. And I want to thank everybody very much for their great participation. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think that is very much in line. Also, David's comment, if I get it right, is very much in line with the idea that we had in now two studies on adaptability of scripts. So At least in one of those, we found that an adaptable script, and which is exactly what Susan just described, people were asked what components of the external script they would like to have for the next task, and they could switch stuff on and off, and they could completely make it go away. That we found in that condition more beneficial effects than in a condition with a continuous, not changeable script. And we were actually surprised by that. We were thinking maybe for some learners this is a good thing, namely for those who have high self-regulation competences, so to speak. And we had at least a self-report measure on self-regulation competence in there, but we did not see, observe it making it an effect. In a second study that we ran recently, it seems a bit more that self-regulation competence plays a role, and we are currently looking at ways to measure self-regulation competence in a more objective way by looking at the discourse that is going on in the groups as they are making the decision whether they want or do not want to have the script anymore. And so I think these are very interesting avenues for future research that we are also following right now.
Okay, I just wanted to thank everyone, also Christoph and Ingo, for taking over most parts here. I also wanted to mention that maybe you have missed that part, but the theory text is written by four authors. We have one in addition, Carsten Stegmann, and all the four authors are first authors. So this is what sometimes is missed when you just read through the text. I like Susan's point with metacognitive awareness. I think this is something that has to be investigated much more in the future, because the adaptive part, so having adaptive scripts, which means there is an intelligent system reacting to something that is diagnosed in the individual configuration of internal scripts, this is a really hard road, let's say. And it's maybe much easier to have more flexible internal collaboration scripts, let's say adaptive internal collaboration scripts. And I think metacognitive awareness is the most promising road to go there. Thanks everyone, thanks Susan, thanks to all the participants.
Also,
from our side as well.
Yeah, thank you very much. I had a ball. Thank you.
Okay, well, I'd like to sign off for everyone and thank everybody again.